106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses. Hit it.
Yeah, yeah, oh yeah, what condition my condition was in.
I woke up this morning with the sundown shining in. Oh.
Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
It's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
Found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, That's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis.
I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut through the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What the f*** are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sundown shining in.
Hello and welcome to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Allen, Greg Pappas on the board. S&P futures up 62, NASDAQ futures up 338. If we had an amazing day yesterday, we had a GDP number that came out negative. At the end of the day, all the talking heads came out and said, don't worry about it. So we came flying back and actually finished up. You know, we had Microsoft and Meta posted huge earnings last night, and they're both way up. Microsoft's up to like 13 times revenue and 30 some times PE, and it's like, wow. But evidently, the big keep getting bigger. Yet, on the top of the page here for the rest of us, McDonald's reports largest U.S. same-store sale decline since 2020. So we do seem to have parts of the population going two different directions here. But that could go on for a real long time because it sort of already has. Do we have Professor Liu?
Good morning.
How are you? So are seven stocks going to take over the world? And by the way, your buddy Elon, his place in Texas where he launches his missiles and stuff from, he wants to take over the area and make it his city now. He wants to own the city. He wants to run the city. Does George Pullman come back from the dead here or what?
So... Boca Chica, right? That's the place?
Something like that. Is there any limit to these guys' egos?
Well, he wants to take over the city. Why?
Because he can.
Why
did Pullman
That's ridiculous.
That he wants to take over the city?
No. That the reason he wants to take over the city is because he can.
Okay. What's the reason, though?
Well, that's why I'm asking you. I haven't seen anything indicating he wants to, quote, take over, to use your term.
Well, he wants to make the thing his city and have a name for it. It's all.
I would guess regulations. It's just easier to do what you want.
Well, there's enough people there that essentially work for his place. Of course, they're going to be forced to vote yes. And they're going to vote for, it's sort of like the people at Pullman voting it to be Pullman.
Well, okay, so we need to figure out what kind of organization he's or how he's going to organize something like that. I mean, political entities in Texas are subject, I suspect, to the Texas state constitution, which would determine how they organize and under what circumstances. So I don't know. I don't know enough about the story, but
well, it seemed to indicate that there was some kind of a vote of the area. Now, who gets to determine what the area is and how you get to vote? You're right. There's a million details to follow, but
I mean, they whatever corporate structure they put together, or political structure they put together.
They want it for the Rockets. I mean,
He wants. Yeah. I mean, I could. There's some all kinds of good reasons why you would want to do that.
I don't think it's for Tesla. I think it's for the Rocket
right,
one.
The Rocket
yeah,
place.
It's for Space City. He wants to be able to organize this. There will be tax advantages that would be give him the ability to generate revenue in particular ways with taxes or sales or whatever. It would give him some autonomy with respect to, and I think Greg touched on it exactly, with respect to regulatory requirements. I suspect that a city or a political entity within the state of Texas is somehow less subject to federal vagaries or state vagaries with respect to environmental stuff. I mean, what has happened out in California to him and to SpaceX as a result of purely political machinations by the California, what do they call it, the Coastal Commission, is a lesson for him. And, you know, I mean, to the extent that he can control that or can eliminate those kinds of issues for his operation, I understand it. And I think, frankly, given the capabilities of SpaceX, I think that's in the national interest.
Does he get to be a mayor without a council or what?
Well, we don't know. Yeah. I mean, it depends how he organizes it. I don't know Texas constitutional law that well, but I mean, it may be that he can organize with the city manager, or it may be that they can organize with this the city council. It makes sense in a lot of different angles, but I think Greg probably touched on the key one, which is regulatory control I think regulatory immunity, I think, would be the way I would phrase it if I had to guess.
Do we get to do that, you and me?
If you set up a town, I mean, if you organize a town or with enough people in a political subdivision or in an area where you could set up a political subdivision, the answer is yes. Let's say you decided you wanted to occupy the old Air Force Base down at Rantoul, which is in southern Illinois.
It's north central Illinois. It's not that far from here.
Well, Rantoul's a little. I think Rantoul's.
It's not as far as
I think it's in the southern. I thought it was in the southern half of the state.
It's not as far as Springfield. Oh, look.
But in any event, Chinook, the old Chinook Air Force Base.
Oh, Chinook.
Let's say you moved, you know, 25,000 people in there, and that's not within the city. That operation is not within the city limits. So you move them in there, and then you go to the state and say, okay, I've got this functioning entity. I've got enough people here. I've got enough water use. I've got enough power demands. I want to set up a separate political entity, a town named Chief Berg.
I did a quick search for you guys. Under the statute, the area is hoping to incorporate, it has to have between 201 and 4,999 inhabitants, must occupy less than 2 square miles, and must submit a petition to the county judge requesting incorporation election.
Less than 2 square miles.
So they...
It's not very big in Texas. It's not as big as a ranch, for God's sake.
Yeah, 2 square miles, and must submit a petition to the county judge requesting an incorporation election. So
that's obviously that for point, a small...
Yeah, at that point, they have to define their boundaries, and then they can... It looks like they need 10% of qualified voters of the community. So that's how they would... Of, say there's 3,000, they would need 300 of those people to vote.
Lou, how does just in general, not necessarily...
But they have to be residents, right?
Greg? Yes.
These are not temporaries coming in to work there.
I believe they have to live there, and they need to be qualified, which means...
Yeah, most people there work for this place, so that wouldn't be that hard.
Well, the question is whether they're living there.
Yeah, they are. I think, as what I heard this morning, they are. I
mean, so
if they're living there, they call the election.
Yeah, well, what is the just in general? I mean, I'm sure we have better stuff to talk about, but you always make me curious. How did it evolve like differently to where here in Illinois, there's more municipalities, I think, than any other state in the union? How did you get like a west side where seemingly every 8 blocks you're going to a new village, and then you compare that to, like, I'm driving up from Texas into Oklahoma, and I'm out in the middle, literally, of nowhere, and I see a sign that says, you entered Oklahoma City. Were they, like, in next, God knows how many miles outside the place, where there's, like, never going to be a suburb? But how did those evolve in so different directions? Just the state of law, just the fact that one place got a lot of land and no people, or what?
Well, I mean, it's federalism. So there's no federal requirements on this. The states are allowed to organize these things as they see fit. So a state constitution or a state statutory scheme gives you, sets the requirements for political entities, like Greg just read. So that entity that they're trying to establish there in Texas, it's fascinating. It's controlled by the county.
Yeah, that's interesting. Well,
you know, by a county requirement, and you know, it the law designed by, you know, various people in the state house, and they sit down and say, okay, what kind of political entities do we want to have? Illinois is famous for corruption, and one of the reasons you have so much corruption is because you have so many political entities. So when I lived in Western Springs, there was the village of Western Springs, there was Lyons Township, which I never heard about it doing anything. There was Cook County.
It's the biggest county in the country, by the way.
Pardon me?
It's the biggest county in the country.
Yeah. There was Cook County. You had you know, elections, and when we had elections, you had elections for the water board, the park district, whatever. I mean, it was crazy.
I've got these links here. I can put them in the show notes for you guys.
Yeah, I mean, I just involves them. So, in other words, if you would
afterwards.
So, in other words, if you want to have something here in this area, because I know there have been remember the old Santa Fe Speedway. Ever hear that place?
No.
It was on the southwest side, and it was unincorporated Cook County. And they had, it was a huge hunk of property. I mean, the speedway was big, and then they had, you know, parking lots and all the other crap that went with it. And when they shut down, Burr Ridge and, what the hell was the guys next to them, they fought over that property for like a long time. And I think it ended up landing with Burr Ridge or something, but I think it was an internal county fight, Lou. I don't think it was a state fight.
But so to go back to your original question, the states set this stuff up. These things develop as, you know, they evolve under state law. Somebody comes in and says, you know, I want to put a political division here. I mean, in Colorado, for example, when you come in to be or when you build a bunch of homes, you're a developer, let's say, and you want to put, you know, 500. You know, 1,000 homes in this development, you can establish a self-governing entity around that homeowner community that is basically run by the developer up until the time that the people in the community, there are enough people in the community to vote. And sometimes those communities get absorbed into a larger urban area, or sometimes they sit separate and apart.
Is that right now? Is that what I talked about here? Is that whatever county you're in, would that just be unincorporated something-something county like here?
Yes.
And so it's just land owned way. By somebody.
Yeah, that would be one way of looking at it. You would, here, you set these things up so that they can, you know, get the largesse of, you know, local water, local power, local government arrangements, local road maintenance. That's a big one. So,
it looks like they've got 200 of 283 eligible voters. They've already voted.
Okay.
Yeah.
And it says that Elon voted in the November elections, but he's not among the early voters for the incorporation election.
Well, if it's unincorporated and they just want to make a place, I guess there's probably nothing wrong with that, is there?
Well, even if you thought it was wrong, as long as it's legal,
yeah.
It's
well, I'm saying it. Maybe it would make sense. I don't know if I'd want to be, because if you're unincorporated here, if you call for the fire department, you end up with, I don't know who you even get if you don't have your own place. Same thing with the police.
So I want to kick back to your last week's show, which I was unable to attend, and I apologize about the short notice on that. One of my attorney friends who listens to the show, apparently, she messaged me and said, Tell your pals if they're going to talk about workers' compensation, they need to do a little more research.
I don't think we were talking on Thursday about workers' comp.
She was listening to. She was listening. I got a message from her right after the show.
Your sub was Bill Moriarty, and we talked about overseas contracts and how they were funded and stuff.
Well, whoever you were talking to about workers' compensation, my friend said, just you know, if they're going to talk about this, have them read up. And I offered to put her on the show.
We were talking with somebody, and it wasn't Thursday, but it was we were talking about how the workman's comp is going to be affected with the LLCs and stuff splitting off in the football. And the first thing I said was, where's Lou when we need him?
Oh, well, if we're going to talk about that, let me know, and I'll bring this woman on because she's brilliant. And she...
let's do it next week.
She handles workers' compensation for and a lot of other employment legal matters for the Denver Broncos. So she's directly in the loop on this.
How would you assess, because I mentioned it this week, and by the way, all three times I said, where the hell is Lou when I need him? How would you assess...
You guys always do this.
Supposedly John Elway killed that guy.
You always have these conversations when I'm not here.
Well, the news happens, the LLC thing for...
For Kentucky, yeah.
It happened when you weren't here. What can I tell you? What am I going to buzz you back, Scotty? So the question came up with, what happens with this simmering CEE thing and all the other stuff that goes with it? And I brought up George Conner 10 times about how he had 25 surgeries after he left football. None of them paid for by Notre Dame and the Bears. And I think that ship maybe has sailed. I said, if you're a college board member, do you want people as employees? Do you want to take that on? And can you get rid of it by kicking it to this LLC? Those were all Lou questions.
Okay. Well, what did you guys decide?
We didn't. We said, where the hell's Lou?
Oh.
We said that the more I read it into the LLC thing, the more questions I came up with. I have no answers. I just have questions.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Kristen would have been, at least with respect to workers' comp, Kristen would have been the one to talk to on that. But let me just, I looked at that article about Kentucky, and I think this goes to something we've said many times on the show, which is, if you're an athletic director, you did not sign up for the management of an employment operation or a funding operation like this, and the faster you can outsource it to people who know what they're doing or who have a better idea of what they're doing than you do, the better. And if they are going to start outsourcing their athletic departments to LLCs so that they can better take advantage of and get a better understanding of tax issues, funding issues, payroll issues, then you're going to see a movement on this towards what we discussed half a year ago, the BlackRock, the BlackRock conference of 70 teams playing college football under the aegis of a private venture capital company, and that's going to happen, I think.
What I've been trying to say is the stuff that I think I'm somewhat knowledgeable about, and when you open up a can of economic worms, I think I'm pretty decent at saying, okay, here's where this is going to lead, and if this becomes a purely for profit model, I don't see how you justify any other sport, except for men's football, men's basketball, maybe women's basketball in a couple places, maybe baseball.
Yeah,
I don't see how that. I mean, why the hell anybody would send
right them? And of course. The other thing is, if you move this to an LLC, you move the NIL name, image, likeness payouts to an LLC, I think that would allow you, I mean, certainly under this administration, probably not under the Biden administration, under a Democratic administration, because they would try to figure out some way to screw the law up. But it insulates you from the Title IX issues.
Well, why should it?
And, pardon me?
Why should it?
Because these operations are no longer part of the college.
Okay, well, I mean, that's sort of my point. What exactly are they? Is the college the principal in the LLC? It's not like they're not going to get the money.
Well, the college isn't going to get the money. The LLC.
But I mean, are they a principal? Are they the main principal? Are they what's the governing principal in LLC? What's he called?
Well, typically LLCs are run by a CEO. They're a limited liability corporation,
right,
so they're typically run by a CEO.
But one of the principals, one of the investors, is in charge, right?
Not necessarily, no.
Well, there's somebody can vote the CEO out. Who's the somebody?
That would typically be a board.
All right.
So the LLC would be organized under the law of the state. It would operate, you know, it would operate as an athletic department. So the question is, do you put your entire athletic department under the LLC?
Kentucky seems, according to the article I sent you, seems to have done the whole athletic department. Is that,
right.
Does that include intramurals?
But no, probably not. But it depends what you've got going. I mean, the athletic department can be organized along any lines that the university wants. They just outsource all of this as much as they want to run to the LLC. They say club sports can operate for us, but we're not funding those.
Here's the question. When I'm just kind of thinking as a troublemaker, if you appoint your same, and you do it so well. If you appoint your same board that's part of call it the university, isn't there a conflict of interest when you put them in charge of the LLC? Can't they in turn start doing things that are beneficial to themselves as principals or investors in an LLC versus state-funded institutions?
Okay, so first of all, that's a good question, but there are all kinds of statutory requirements under state corporation laws with respect to obligations for LLC members and officers. So potentially there's a conflict of interest, but there are a number of statutory requirements that would say you can't do these kinds of deals or you can't have these kinds of positions. Typically, officers in a corporation are held to something, you know, called a good faith and fair dealing standard, which is, well...
As soon as you appoint people, or I don't know, I guess it's 0 to 100 real quick with that, because they have the reputation, they have the money. The money's going to come from somewhere.
Well, Kentucky didn't mention any outside money, Lou, did they?
No,
exactly.
They didn't.
It's still a different entity. And as soon as you hand over the ownership to, you know, and the control to a certain group that has no affiliation, quote, with the university, that's the conflicts of interest. I mean, I can think of.
Jan Flanagan, we tried to do, actually, it's anticipation of you and I talking about this. Jan did a little history of just how the money and how the grants came for these, quote, land-grant universities. And he was wondering how that much, if there's any trails back to that. In other words, he claims that the...
Oh, yeah. I'm sure there is. I'm sure there are limitations on the organizing law on these things. I'm sure there could be limitations that might pop up, but it's totally state specific, and there may
that was my question to him, and he seemed to think that all the land grant universities came from one thing. They were federal land grants; they weren't state.
Okay.
I didn't know that, so they might be somewhat similar. So I guess my question is: can the board of Kentucky or Illinois or Wisconsin, that are all land-grant universities, can the board of the university off a department without running it through the state or the governor sign it? I mean, somewhere along the line, who's got what power here? Was given to them in the first place by somebody else? Does anybody even know what the tie-ins are back? Maybe none. It could be none.
I don't know. I don't know of limitations on the ability of these universities to organize themselves because of the land grant status. Typically, again, that's a pure state law function. What I would expect happened, and I say this without knowing it, but what I would expect happened is that the land grant terms were very generic and very basic, with the understanding that the states would organize these things in ways they saw fit, again, to take advantage of federalism. So the charters for these schools would be slightly different in each place. Typically, the guys that have to make the decisions on these things are a board of regents that are appointed by the governor, who you know, and that's who they answer to. So the board of regents would authorize this LLC formation. The university would reach out, contract with a law firm to draw up the articles of incorporation, so that this athletic department LLC would run the way the university wanted it to, but in a manner that would effectively insulate the university from Title IX and a number of other factors, a number of other statutes. And then from there, the LLC would start its operation.
How do you do that without blowing all your tax status? The word tuition is now taxable and all the other. I mean, I don't see, boy, if I'm a federal government, if I'm in the White House, that ain't, all of a sudden every single guy walking into Kentucky Stadium is playing the municipal tax for whatever it is. I don't see how you get away free on this.
I think that's one of many issues that's going to have to be resolved. So for example, you know, in cities where they charge a municipal wage tax, like Pittsburgh or Philadelphia, Pennsylvania always comes to mind because they were the worst. You know, if you're Villanova, you play in downtown Philly. So are suddenly all of your players subject to the metropolitan tax, the metropolitan area tax? I would assume so. But again, if this money, you know, the problem is you can't dodge it. The question is just who's going to pay it. If we're setting these NIL payments up as quasi wages, then the tax liability is there. And if I'm the university, I'm going to say, you know what, I'm not running a for-profit athletic department. We're going to cut that thing loose because that does endanger our not-for-profit status as a university. So we're going to cut that thing loose because we don't want that entanglement. I mean, there are 50 good reasons why a college would now say, if we're setting up a revenue generating operation like this that is going to be formally recognized as a wage paying or something comparable to wage payment, and this goes back again to my point that I've been saying from day one, since the first idiotic NLRB opinion issued that the Northwestern football players were employees. I've been saying this from day one. The employer-employee model is the wrong analytical model to use in these situations. The athletes are not employees. The model is something much closer to an in loco parentis model, where the coaches and athletic staff are acting as parents to these kids. But you know, we seem to be moving toward this.
Hard to explain that when you saw it. With the antics of the Tennessee, now UCLA quarterback, it's hard to even consider that an in loco parentis kind of deal.
But that's a closer model. I'm not saying it's perfect, but it's closer than an employer-employee model.
Well, if I outbid you from your law firm, it sure seems to me like you're working for me.
Well, but again, that's just a payment. It's not a wage. And so we move toward, but we're drifting into this model. So that's where we are. But if you're the university, you say, look, I didn't sign up for hiring over-hormoned young men with poor impulse control to multi-million dollar contracts. That's not my gig. I'm going to turn that over to an LLC and cut all of that loose so that it doesn't endanger our not-for-profit status in 100 other ways.
Okay, but I know I'm skipping around because there's just a million different questions. But if somebody, if there's
well, that's what we do here.
I know, but if, you know what? In one hand, it sounds like I'm skipping around. On the other hand, I really do believe everything we talk about affects everything else we talk about. I mean, you can't just isolate one. So what if some dude never played high school football, never played football in the backyard, ran track or did some other goddamn thing, and all of a sudden, as a sophomore, they look at this guy and go, hey, you're pretty big. Why don't you try and play halfback, sort of like Ronald Reagan, the Gipper. Hey, you think you can run through those players? Yeah, I can do that. And ran through them like he did. Nobody could tackle him. There's going to be somebody who only played 3 years for some college, never played pro, became a doctor or something, and 20 years later has CEE, and there's no way the college can blame it on high school or pro, and he's going to sue Notre Dame, and they're going to say, talk to our LLC. I don't think that dog hunts, do you?
Well, what the LLC will do is the LLC will have insurance. And so when you send him to the LLC, the LLC will say, here, here's an insurance form, file a claim, and we'll let our carrier deal with it.
Okay, but if it's...
At which point, I come in, or people like me come in. Because we're gonna come in to look and see.
I don't see how they get rid of the liability of 60 years of people getting hurt playing football by forming an LLC and say it's your problem. One of these
well,
days,
they form the LLC and say
in 2027. How does that insulate them from 1995?
They're not currently responsible for that.
This is part of the fight in the House settlement that and House refers to the case in California. The House settlement where you have, you know, 50,000 guys who are opting out of the settlement because they say back in 2010 or 2012 they didn't get their share of NIL money and the settlement doesn't give them enough.
There wasn't any NIL money back then.
Well, yeah, there was. And
why who? Or who?
Before the players whose names, images, and likenesses were being used in video games.
Okay.
Example.
All right, those guys. Fair enough.
You know, to give you an example, just one example.
Just a regular old tackle from 15 years ago. What does he think he gets?
Well, I mean, I've got a nephew.
Why do I always pick on tackles?
I got a nephew who was a tight end for Indiana, who may get a payment out of this thing, and he played. God, I'm trying to think how old he is now. These kids grow up so fast. Or they seem like they grow up
maybe,
so
maybe
fast.
Maybe we age so fast.
Well, that's right. I think he played 10 years ago. So you know, and Indiana football 10 years ago was not generating a lot of NIL money. But he's going to get a cut. So you've got these kids opting out of this. It's the same issue. You show up on the doorstep and say, I got wrecked 10 years ago, and the school's going to go prove it. You know, you want to sue us, prove it. Or maybe Notre Dame in its Christian largesse will do this. They set up what's called a tail fund that covers guys who were wrecked or got hurt before the LLC got established. Here's a making a claim against our insurer, our benefits plan, like this. I mean, there are a number of ways to deal with this.
Each
place is going to do it slightly differently.
But we who do the show, because we have you in here and maybe a couple other people, have a pretty reasonable idea of what's going on. And me, from the economic side, I see like five or six different levels. And every time I hear somebody in a bar or really somebody else on the show or in a coffee shop or in a library or church, say NIL, I almost like hair goes up in the back of my neck because there's so many different iterations of this that I don't even like. For I'll use the Notre Dame girls basketball team. The one lady who's really good, she's a sophomore. Hidalgo is her name. She gets a thing from Red Bull. The girl's cute as a button. She's very articulate. She's getting good grades, and she's a hell of a basketball player. And the girls have been on, the whole team was on, I don't know how much money they got, they're on State Farm. Now, because they're all very personal. Who's the African-American girl? Also, it was a State Farm girl. Was she the lady who got hurt at Southern Cal?
But I digress.
But I'm saying they have done this on their own. To me, that's almost the pure Supreme Court decision stuff. That, to me... If I'm a girl playing 10 years ago, and you know, maybe I was prevented from getting something with Red Bull, but I also didn't do it. Now that to me is so much different than the quarterback, where the school is arranging payments and bidding for the guy, that where you can't say that he's an Under Armour guy, but by the way, he does commercials like Peyton Manning and he's good at it and he's the face of Under Armour. That's so much different to me. Just paying a tackle because you have to when the guy, you don't want him anywhere near your camera. That's so much different than, I'm saying there's different levels of this. Some places actually are hiring people because they're damn good spokesmen for the place. It has nothing to do with the school.
Well, that's why I say the employment model is the wrong model to look at for this.
Well, for that it is. I agree with you. But now, for the
whole thing. And let me say this while we're postulating at our parade of our horribles. You know, you've got we're rapidly developing into these two kinds of compensation, and you've identified the issue. The one compensation is sort of a generic NIL payment that goes to everybody on the team because they're affiliated with the team and the team is supposedly, quote, marketing them together. So that's
talking about the university paying or State Farm paying?
I'm sorry?
You're talking about the university paying.
No, I'm talking about State Farm paying. Okay. But this is one fund.
Yep.
And then another fund is specifically targeted to particular athletes who allegedly are who have a name, image, or likeness that is significantly more valuable than the others. And those are two different kinds of payments.
Sure.
Some of them are coming from, one's coming from the university as a sort of a collective. The other is being paid by a separate entity set up to manage
what makes
donations.
You think, I don't know. You could be right. What makes you think Notre Dame set up the State Farm deal? Maybe one of the girls did.
Well, who knows? I don't know. But I'm so you have to. This is again another problem with the House settlement. They're trying to deal with this right now, but you have somebody like Livy Dunn, who is, you know, the queen of NIL and was out earning most of her male comparators as a female gymnast because she's gorgeous and fit and, you know, bubbly and articulate, and is the perfect model if you're trying to sell.
You want her to be the face of your law firm. Why not?
Well, I don't know about the face of your law firm, but you definitely want her to be the face of your clothing company.
Sure.
So you've got her, and she's saying, I'm worth millions. I'm making $4 million a year in NIL. And it's legitimate. You know, I'm renting
my
face.
None of those checks come from the school.
None of them come from the school. They go straight to her. She has an agent, an agency that organizes all this stuff.
Don't say agent, and marketing helper.
The agent thing has disappeared. The distinction about hiring an agent. You have the Sanders other kid who just fired his father, fired Dion as his quote agent, and hired Drew Rosenhaus. I'm sorry, that's an agency relationship. But in any event, you've got her sitting out here, and she's going, this is all on me. You know, I did this.
Well, how's the House going to make all these people equal? I'm saying it's nowhere near equal.
Well, House can't. They're doing the best they can, and moving forward, they're going to try to set up an organized structure for this. But here's the kicker. You know, House imposes roster limits on teams. It also imposes caps for payments on universities for NIL. So immediately, you're an economist, Tom. Now we're back in your realm. What's the first thing that you think is going to happen when you're telling colleges, you've got this much money you can pay your star athletes, and that's it?
Okay, but the first thing I'm going to ask is, who's the you?
This agency that's set up by the...
I understand,
the
but I'm
entity
saying,
set up by the settlement.
So... You and I go back in life, and we're a quarterback for Vanderbilt, and they can pay us $100,000, whatever the hell the number is, and Nike or somebody who's the Vanderbilt school says, well, I'm paying you $2 million if you want to go to Nike. That's my school. How are they going to stop that?
Oh, they are going to stop it because they're going to say if you bust your salary cap, if you bust your NIL cap,
but they haven't busted it. Nike did.
Oh no, it's all funded. Every donation to every athlete goes in under the NIL cap, and you're getting close to the point.
I'm not the attorney here, but I'm going to say that's exactly in opposition to the Supreme Court ruling. They now back to own your name, image, and likeness.
And that's why you do this in lawsuit settlements, which are contractual arrangements that will escape monopoly.
I don't see how the House can put the NIL genie back in the bottle. They're going to say that Hidalgo can't get the Red Bull thing.
Yep, that's right.
I don't see.
They're going to say.
I think that dog won't hunt, Lou.
I think it will, because it'll have the imprimatur of a federal court.
What federal court?
That's what you do. You enter into settlement agreements. We talked about this 2 weeks ago.
But who do you settle with?
You're settling with the NCAA and all the other colleges who sign on to this agreement. So UCAP.
Am I the only person who realizes that this gets you right back into they own your name, image, and likeness, which the court said you don't own?
Yep. So here, listen, it gets better. What happens?
God, what, why is this?
So you come. Wait a minute. You come to these schools, and you say, "Here's how much money you've got to spend on NIL, and not a penny more. If you do, you get penalized." And the school looks around, and the coach looks around, and says, "I really want this kid as our starting running back, but I can't pay him because my NIL payments are going out to five other guys, so I can't give him as much as a school who hasn't committed to make these other NIL payments." So what happens? I pick up the phone, I call a big donor, and I say, "I need you to slip the kid that I want another $2 million under the table. So we will be back to envelopes, or in some cases, paper bags full of cash, passing hands under the table again."
Suitcase.
Yeah, we're getting more of a suitcase for the mills.
Yeah, well, it'll be in, you know, bullion or something.
Yeah.
Bitcoin.
Bingo.
Ephemeral. Yeah, totally.
I'm going to be the athletic director for a second. First of all, I'm appointed as CEO of the LLC. The first thing I do is start handing out.
So full stop. You will not be the athletic director as the CEO of the LLC. The CEO of the LLC will be whoever has put the most money into it.
CEO is going to be picked by the university.
The university may not get a vote. They'll have somebody on the board of directors.
What's their cut going to be?
Who knows?
Well, anyway, here's what you do. You start self-dealing, first of all, because that's, you got to pass out however much they're giving you per year, right? You've got to spend it.
Oh, with the NIL money. Okay, yeah. So the LLC.
So
the LLC,
first you self-deal. That's how the troublemakers playbook. Then you start kicking back stuff to agents and sponsors.
Oh, yeah.
And then not only do you take the private jet and do whatever you want with that, you start transferring intellectual property to the LLC and taking it from the school. It's going to happen.
I'm still curious how the young lady or maybe guy who all of a sudden has an amazing personality and looks that wants to be the face of Coca-Cola, he's going right back in court saying, "How come I can't be the face of Coca-Cola? Just because I'm playing basketball. What are you doing to me?" But the interesting part, I lobbed one out to my buddies, my crazy Notre Dame friends. They still love the place. They still do stuff. And whenever they go back for a game every year, Lou, literally, they bring like an extra suitcase to bring crap home for all the grandkids. And there can't be a grandkid that doesn't have Notre Dame underpants on. You know, I mean, and I think that happened with Indiana last year when they got in the playoffs, because I saw everybody with Indiana stuff in bags here they bought in Chicago. I asked my guys, and I didn't get an answer back. Are you going to buy the hat if it says NDLLC on it? I mean, the whole idea of paying up for these tickets and stuff is that the money went for all the other athletics, even if it was all bullshit, went for all the other athletics and went for intramurals. So you were essentially paying for the inner hall basketball that we all played, or the inner hall football.
Who's going to own the brand, though?
But now what if you dump all that stuff now? There are no other athletics. Who's going to pay for them? Or they're all club sports or anything. I don't know if my guys want to give that money anymore. I mean, at some point...
The question is, who owns the brand? I mean, that's the entire reason.
I don't think University of Illinois can give up University of Illinois, can they?
If I was the LLC CEO, I would sure as try. I would say we're taking this as intellectual property.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to fly.
No.
Why wouldn't it?
But,
how they get their money.
Because the university would say, you know, if you want that brand, you can buy it from us or you can lease it from us. And that's how that'll work.
that's going to be the big payment then, isn't it?
I think it'll have to be NDLLC or something along those lines.
Yep. So this...
Instantly, you get all these conflicts of interest that when... I mean, that's selling the golden goose. It's the whole community that's created by the university that was all of a sudden...
Yeah. The value comes from the affiliation.
From the million and a half... Yeah. I want to say that however many alumni who are willing to go to those games everywhere just because and buy the stuff everywhere. I mean, if you're the CEO, that's huge value.
Yep.
And you didn't have to pay anything
for
it.
I think that the LLC that just got created in Kentucky is fairly well convinced that they can sell Kentucky hats.
Oh, they absolutely can.
Yeah.
The brand is they're renting the brand, or the brand is licensed under Kentucky state law to this LLC, and they have an exclusive right to it. I mean, if you're the LLC director, Greg, you would say, you know, no more contracts with Nike or anybody else.
So if essentially, we're going to start trading LLCs too.
Maybe.
Kentucky's athletic department.
Well,
they're
not corporations. You can't trade
them. Yeah, you can.
No, you can't.
You can sell an LLC to whoever you want.
Well, they're not. The LLC will not be a marketable entity.
Why not?
Because the state wouldn't let it. When you set the thing up, it's not gonna be able to be sold.
Yeah, you went from a land grant to a nonprofit or non-taxable to being able to off something. I don't know. Hey, Lou, this subject's gonna be around forever. Regarding what happened to the market yesterday, now the official excuse / definition as to why the GDP number being negative was not a big deal, and actually there's some truth to it, is that your GDP is all goods and services by consumers, all investment, all government spending, and the net export import. And in the first quarter, because of this tariffs on, tariffs off, evidently there's a bunch of people who have bought stuff in advance from overseas, stockpiling things in anticipation.
Right. Our balance of payments was way down. We imported a bunch of stuff because we were afraid.
Right.
Of...
So that would detract from your GDP.
Yeah. But it's a way that then it distorts what the GDP is supposed to be measured.
It distorts it in some ways, but if you're already distorting it by your deflator being a distortion, but that's just my opinion. But I guess what I'm saying is, Lou, we came out with the big companies yesterday. And they're all valued to the moon, and they're all doing swimmingly. Seemingly, they're all in with, you know, the occupant in the Oval Office. Yet these other companies, not so much. I mean, you're seeing a big, like yesterday, as much as the market came back, the Russell was still down. I was listening this morning on the radio real quick that in the first 100 days, small businesses, something like 1,800 contracts to small businesses were canceled, which is a record any 100 days ever in government. Now, man, maybe a lot of them shouldn't have been there in the first place, but who knows. But there seems to be this split you and I have been talking about since you got on the show seems to be widening even more. I mean, how far can that go? I mean, I think it can go further, actually, because it doesn't seem to be any... Everybody seems to love it. As long as these stocks go up, nobody cares if they just keep getting more and more of stuff. You know, and the thing that I don't really care that much if some little group in Texas decides to have a, you know, Tesla town or something, or Musk town. But I hearken back to the first one of these guys was Harold Janine of ITT, and I remember reading in his book, "We know everything, we should be running the world, these governments are just a bunch of chumps in the way." And, well, you're seeing it kind of playing out, huh? I mean, does anybody really think that Microsoft or any of these places really give a crap about the U.S.? I mean, they think they should run the world, I think. The egos of these people are dramatic.
I think this is less a function of the egos of the corporate management team and more a situation where big companies like Microsoft and a number of other places are in a position where they can exploit or at least benefit from the chaos that's being introduced here by the president and his team. I read a really interesting.
But they've benefited through every administration since we've been on the air.
I'm just saying that doesn't mean that they're not able to benefit from this. When you have something going on like what's happening with Trump, and I read a really interesting piece on this yesterday that said, look, he may just be totally reckless, you know, bull in a china shop, but it looks to us, this analyst and this team, it looks to us like there is a definite method to this madness, and one of the methods is to create the kind of chaos and turmoil that he's created, or his policies are creating, to exploit opportunities, both projected and unexpected.
But for who?
That result from all this craziness, and the short answer to that is it's the same issue that you see with overregulation. The people who can deal with overregulation are the same people, because they've got staffs of lawyers and they're big and they're diversified, and they have people sitting around thinking about this rather than you know, the next shipment coming in from somewhere, are the big companies. They are large corporate entities, have teams of people who are constantly analyzing what's happening in these various markets as a result of the turmoil being created by our economic policy, and they can exploit it. And this may be the same, you know, they may be in the same kind of situation or same kind of position that the federal government's in, which is, again, lots of people sitting around looking at how this plays out and watching how countries, markets react, and saying, okay, there's a position we could take now as a result of this change that we can take advantage of that will benefit us. And this is a hallmark of large organizations that can staff this. The small businesses, the ones that are running day-to-day, that don't have a bunch of people available to do this kind of analysis, they're going to get hurt. And how long can that go on? It can go on till probably the midterms, if there are enough people being hurt. What the administration, I think, is counting on, and I'm projecting here, is that this turmoil will gradually reside within a year to give them enough time to turn things around and point to results and say, see, this is getting fixed. And so we'll have to see what happens. But I did note that you know, companies like Microsoft or SpaceX, or these large defense contractors that we talk about a lot, these guys are positioned to take advantage of this kind of craziness. And I think that's what you'll see.
Well,
now
there's two. One of my, looking back in history since you and I have been alive, if you do this kind of stuff in a period of growth, where somebody grows 7% and the guy who sits on his ass and drinks beer at night grows at 3%, he's not necessarily all pissed off, because the direction is still the same way. When you have an economy that's not growing, and some people seem to really be able to take advantage of it, just because of the numbers, and maybe not their attitude's any different than people any other time, they're going to take advantage of it, because other people aren't. They're taking chunk out of somebody else's behind, because if there isn't growth, you can't say, well, gee, the guy down the block does better than me, but he works on Saturdays and I play golf, so he deserves it. That's not where we're going with this. Every time somebody does well now, it seems like, and I will say this, I mean, I couldn't prosecute somebody, I don't have the evidence, but I tell you what, I could probably find some if I had the tools. I have never seen front running on this stuff like I've seen in the market today. These days, people are making a fortune on these 2 and 3% market moves that come from one statement in the morning and one in the afternoon. We had one of the guys here in the office, and this is, you know, it's been my opinion. I watch this stuff all day long. It's what I do for a living. One of the guys in the office takes guitar lessons Thursday night, and they go out for a beer afterward, and one lady in the class, he didn't even know where the hell she works, sits down next to him, not trying to pick him up or anything, and just says, he says, well, what do you do for a living? She goes, well, I work for a big bond house, and we trade bonds. He goes, how's that going? She goes, we have never seen front-running like this ever in the bonds. This happens every day. These guys are stealing. He goes, totally unprompted. I didn't even ask. All I asked her is where she worked, and out that popped. I mean, this is incredible. The NASDAQ futures were down 450 points. They closed up 250, and today they're up 650. We're talking about 1,300 points in 5 hours of trading. And something leaked on these numbers, something did this, or Navarro came out.
Or people are guessing and are using analytical tools to project what is likely to happen and are trying to take advantage of it. It doesn't all have to come from insider trading.
The Commerce Secretary at this point should have been hauled off in irons probably two or three times. Every time the guy talks, the other day he came out and we were down, we weren't down that much, but all of a sudden we rallied 400 points in the Dow. He came out and said, we have a deal with a big country. Never named the country, and it was never, 4 hours later, there was no deal. There was never anything, but the market turned on the guy's speech.
Well, again, you know, this is why you guys, I think, or our investment counselors that I've listened to, have said you are not going to get ahead trying to track every swing of the market because it's too volatile.
That's not the point. The point is, do you have any idea what a one lot in the spoos in the last week, if you knew the content of these speeches, what you would have made? We're talking Trump's family isn't the richest people that ever walked, or maybe that's not them. You can't tell me there's nobody around there who's looking there and go, whoa, this is pretty cool.
But I mean, I don't see evidence of leaking going on with respect to doing it deliberately to try to justify profits. Maybe you do. I don't follow this stuff that closely.
Well, do you think in this Justice Department, or in any really, that anybody looks at a big move in the market and you sit there and go, okay, what was the cause of this move, allegedly? You never really know, like you said. But if it's
the short answer is yes, I do think there are people who look at that.
Okay, and I don't think so. Well, right. Let me ask you this. They look at it. Do you think if, for instance, the Commerce Secretary says something at 10 o'clock that's a market mover, do you think that the Department of Justice and our SEC appointed by this guy or anybody there, because they're going to get into a wrong name, you don't want to, is immediately going to pick up the phone and say, hey, Judy, Joe, I want to know any big trades that took place between 9:45 and 10 that were bullish on the market, and who trace them back to whoever the hell they did? Do you think that phone call is going out? I'm thinking absolutely not.
I don't know if a phone call goes out every time, but I know that there are operations within the SEC that look for trends.
These are the same people that called Dr. J for a week.
If they see a consistent front runner or jumping, somebody consistently shorting or long selling stuff over and over and over again, and in correct anticipation of statements coming from, you know, the Secretary of Commerce or whoever, then they're going to move on.
If they're overseas, if they're not white, and if they're not a name, yes, they're not. You think that there's a chance?
I don't think there's any basis for that statement.
Well, the only front running people that I've ever caught were the guy was the a couple of guys in Hong Kong, a couple of guys in India. There was a report from a big think tank in Hong Kong years ago. We talked about this. It said virtually every Treasury and every Federal Reserve announcement is front run. Now they said the labor numbers are not; but those are pretty clean. Said virtually every one of the other ones are front run, and they didn't know who. But when
is it consistent?
The biggest front run,
if they're the same people over and over again, then the SEC is going to be in there.
You think that the SEC is going to walk in and put handcuffs on people in this White House?
Yeah, I do.
Good luck with that.
Well, let me put it this way. I don't think the SEC is any less corrupt under this administration than it has been under any previous.
Like I said, they never arrested anybody from the put buys on United Airlines at 9/11. They were calling Dr. J for a month, wanting to get all his information on who did what on what. Not who, he would know who the.
They never
arrested anybody.
I can't say anything to that. All I can say is I don't have any reason to believe that what you're seeing is anything other than people being smart versus people getting insider information.
Did your mom ever play bridge?
And I will tell you this, to the extent that I firmly believe this, to the extent that these insider beneficiaries are political opponents of the president, I would think that there would be absolutely no hesitation on the part of the SEC to go after them.
I'm just saying, if I can see it and other people see it, it's just like, you know, if you walked into a courthouse that was crooked, you'd know it in a minute. You wouldn't know why or who, but you just say, wait, this doesn't smell right. Anyway, hey, did you see that guy fell out of the stands at Pittsburgh last night?
I did. I didn't see the video of it, but well,
I know, I don't think there was one. I was watching the game. They never showed it.
Fell 21 feet. I did.
I'm not so sure they had a video of it, Lou.
I find that hard to believe.
I find it hard to believe too. But video. The Cub game, the color announcer goes, Ron Kroemer goes, "Oh my God, somebody's fell out of the stands." I don't think it was ever on. It wasn't on the feed. It might have been on a camera someplace.
I mean,
that's why they have the delay.
The question I have is: was he drunk, or was he chasing a foul ball, or both?
I don't know. Boy.
Or what?
Well, you know, I remember my seats at Wrigley. I was first row, upper deck, and the railing came up. Now, you know, I'm 6'4". If I stood up and all of a sudden somebody behind me fell into me, I'd have gone over. It wasn't high enough to. It was certainly high enough where I don't think would go over by myself. But if all of a sudden, I'm not saying push, but if somebody somehow fell behind you, I don't think I could have. Now, if you were 5'6", I think it was high enough. You know, I'm just speculating. I mean, could it happen? Yeah, I mean, I think it could happen.
So the lawyer in me, and on with this, I'll let you go. The lawyer in me immediately sees something like that and goes, "Okay, who gets sued? You know, is it the stadium? Is it the ball club? Is it both?"
These guys mostly all own their stadiums, don't they?
Somebody got pushed. You know, is it foreseeable some guy's going to fall out of the stands there? I mean, that'll be the question.
Okay.
Their insurance company's getting ready for a claim.
What's weather by you? We're talking about all kinds of storms again down south this next couple days.
It's warm. Nice and warm.
You know, your baseball game got snowed out last week.
Yeah. Oh yeah, no, we had snow, but it's we're supposed to have good weather. Well, I think we may get some precip today, but we're nice and
everything good with you. Trip was good.
Trip was very good. Just long.
Okay, you know, some long days. The flights all okay and stuff, or was that a problem?
You know, I don't want to say anything about the flights because I'm flying again at the end of the month, and they're long flights, and I don't want to jinx myself, but. I wasn't uttering, you know, nasty words. Let me put it that way.
Okay. Well, were you up in 1C, or were you with the peasants?
No, I don't fly. I don't even fly in business class. I'm back, as my wife says, I'm back with Gen Pop.
Well, you know that's okay. But you're almost as tall as I am. Those seats are kind of cramped for 8 hours.
Not the seats.
I mean the leg room. I don't care about the seat.
Yeah, they can be. I try not to get myself wedged in either to the window or middle seat. I try to end up on an aisle.
Can you at least get the exit row or something? I used to try and find out that all the time.
You know, that's getting harder. Those are now premium seats. You know, they charge extra for that now.
Really?
Yeah.
All right, but were you around next week or you out of town?
I'll be here next week. I'm going to be out. I'll send you an email, and I'm going to be out at the end of May.
All right, bud. Well, right. Have a good weekend. S&P Futures up 68, NASDAQ Futures up 365. Big rally here, especially if you're in the Meta up 6.5%, and we've got Microsoft up 9%. We're going to go short break here, and then we'll be back with Andrew and Wayne.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, Nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
I can't get no satisfaction.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm talking about Greg Pappas with us. S&P futures up 66, NASDAQ futures up 365. Let's go through some of these stocks. We have Apple actually was down. They're down $3. But Meta is the one that's the world is aglow, according to those guys, up $35, 6.5%. We have Microsoft up 35. That's the big one, up 9%. Microsoft, I mean, obviously these guys are doing everything well. They make money. They're up to 360 a share, I believe. But I've got them. I don't know, maybe you get a better read than last night, Greg. I've got them, but the one I look at, and again, this is not, you know, directing other people to look at the same stuff, but the P.E. ratios, they're informative. What do you think about this, Greg? They're informative, and they show a pattern, and they show growth and those kinds of things. They're up like 10% from last year. Last year was like 322, and now they're 360 or something. So it's up, you know. Okay. But I look... Greg, before we go to Wayne and Andrew, I look at this revenue per share number, because that's hard to grow, and when you see back in 2000, and this is not, don't think this is predilection of a crash or anything, but Cisco and those companies that were really high flyers back then that all collapsed, they were all pushing this 11, 12 times revenue. That's hard to grow into that. I mean, when you're talking about, I mean, that's really, really high. I mean, Microsoft's revenue per share is like $35, and if the thing's trading $4.30, I mean, how does Microsoft grow by 50% or double? Will there be any company left besides them, Greg, or what?
Well, I guess what the market's thinking about now is the multiplicative effect of kind of the scalable technologies that they're developing, meaning maybe maybe something like Copilot or AI really does get enough, get them a reason to charge everybody else.
I get that, and we're on kind of the different. And I hope Andrew and Wayne are listening on this because I want them to opine. When you look at the company, what I did in 2000, I shouldn't do crap like this because all it does is bug me, and I bother other people with it. I went through those stocks. The five at the time were, it was Cisco. It was who were the guys that did all the stuff?
Another reason maybe could be that just the money supply, like we always talk about.
Yeah, well, that's true. But I'm saying if you're right, because it's just. What I'm saying, if you take all of them together, if you take all of them together and you say, okay, Microsoft might actually be 50% bigger in 2 years, they could. I mean, you're right, because they got their head start on a lot of this stuff. But if you look at all seven of them, if you add 50% to all seven of them, you sit there and go, God, this economy better double, or they better double the amount of money in it, which, you by the way, you just brought up. Anyway, let's go to Andrew and Wayne. Guys, what's up? How are you?
Very good.
So you guys are alive and kicking. You went out and broke par yesterday on your local course and all that stuff?
Actually, the pollen is very bad this year in Florida, so I try to avoid being outside as much as I possibly can.
So what are you going to do, scoot up to Maine for the summer or what?
Yeah, maybe Greenland. I hear it's in popular demand.
I bet there's no pollen over there. Nothing grows there.
That's right.
Andrew, Washington's always fun in the summer.
Well, we're not quite at the summer, and I'm not sure it's funny yet, although it is interesting that we may have a new pope from right down the street from me on Pennsylvania Avenue.
Yeah, well.
You saw that, didn't you?
He wants to be pope?
Yeah, at the news conference, I think it was yesterday, they asked President Trump, who's your favorite candidate for pope? And he said words to the effect, well, me.
Oh, God. Well, you know, is there any truth to the rumor that, Vance, was there one of the last guys to see him? Was there any suspicion?
Well, yeah, he was one of the last guys to see him. So, I'm hoping that the author Dan Brown comes out with a new novel.
Oh God! one of my buddies from Pullman from years and years ago sends me a cartoon that Satan couldn't make the funeral, so he sent J.D. Vance as his surrogate.
Yeah, Vance was so. He was so hard on the Pope died. So,
God. Well, of course, they were making book. Greg, of course, comes up with, they were making, like an hour after the guy croaks, they're already making book on the next Pope.
Oh, well, that's right. As a matter of fact, there's also reports today that a bunch of Trump people are launching a campaign, make the Vatican great again. So they've got their own favorites most of these guys they want, some of them favor going back to the Latin Mass, others want a strict discipline as far as the things that Pope Francis was a bit more lenient on, but that's why
he's known as a people's pope.
Yeah, the one thing that Francis did, though, he was no shrinking violet. He ensured that 80% of the people in the conclave, the electors who will be voting for the next pope, are his guys. Well, I can say his guys, because yeah, they're all guys.
Hey, politics is the same everywhere, because people are the same everywhere, right?
Yeah, well, I actually watched this movie, Conclave, and it just showed that during the selection process, these cardinals can be the biggest backstabbing, conniving. I'm not saying that about all of them.
What do you think? You ever think?
Yeah.
Do you ever think you could put a group of human beings? I knew a lady. We didn't really date or anything, and she was on the board of, let's say, one of the animal places here in the city. I won't say which one. She might still be on there. She said the politics there, and it was a donated position. I mean, you just if they had a fundraiser and somebody went out and got more money than the rest of them, they're all pissed off at her for like the silent auction and stuff. And it's my attorney buddy, Bill Murphy. If you guys were in town, you'd love to meet him. He was in the he was ahead of like the Ranch Triangle, like a little neighborhood thing that opined on whether building, and if they didn't like any zoning variances people were trying to get, they would opine and work against it for the city and stuff. I think he was on that board for a long time. I don't think he ever got a dime. And he goes, every meeting was a fight. Somebody. I mean, he's like, after a while, I didn't want to do this anymore. I mean, Russell was on the school board. I don't think he got paid for it, and he had to take his kids out of the school because they were threatening the kids in school or something.
Well, whether it's from a civic obligation or some people love to be active, some people just have some of the most unusual passions. I'll give you an example that the listeners wouldn't ordinarily know, but Wayne got up at 3:30 a.m. to watch the funeral and report on it.
Really?
At the Vatican. And he's charted the potential next popes and come up with all kinds of unusual aspects of this process. And this movie he mentioned, Conclave, just came out. And of course, he's watching that for tea leaves. Wayne, what's the most unusual or interesting or important?
By the way, that movie was the number one movie watched on Netflix last weekend.
Well, yeah, and of course, it was made available free on Amazon Prime. That's why I waited. I waited to, I don't want to pay money to watch these things anymore. But I have to say, they really did their homework on that movie. It showed a lot of things that you wouldn't normally expect to see, the presence of cardinals from the Eastern rite of the Catholic Church. They wear different headgear and all kind, the whole nine yards. They look more like they're Greek Orthodox, but they're the Eastern Rite.
Wayne, what was the one thing in the movie, somebody wrote into the core and said, what was the one thing in the movie that wasn't legit, and it was something about somebody from the outside got in there and got to do some stuff? There was something in there that, like, absolutely went against what actually happens. What was that? Do you have any idea?
Well, I don't want to ruin it for people that haven't seen it yet, but they do go out of their way to explain what they do to the St. Peter's Basilica prior to the conclave, and it's they showed that we have to cover all the windows because there's laser technology that can be used to pick the vibrations up from the voices inside and as an eavesdropping thing. Now, what you're talking about there, the one cardinal who's presiding over this thing, he's played by the actor Ralph Fiennes. He does get involved in some communication with an intermediary from the outside, so that's not supposed to happen. But it's Hollywood,
yeah,
and they can make a lot of things happen that aren't necessarily the case. But the only reason they do this is that it feeds into the plot line, so they would have had to done something other than the Ralph Fiennes character being visited by an angel to tell him.
Oh.
There's a plot here to get some really nefarious guy as the next pope.
Pope Francis, wasn't he kind of a shot from the outside that then nobody, was he a compromise candidate or something?
Well, he was a Vatican insider, but he was involved in the last conclave, the one that selected Benedict, prior to Benedict the 16th having to resign. And my God, when's the last time that happened? What was it, the 12th century or something?
Well, did he resign or did he just retire? or
no,
both?
He resigned because the Italian government was getting ready to indict him for covering up the sex abuse issue. So they did a deal with him, which, by the way, used to happen a lot in this country. If the FBI caught a congressman, you know, doing something, they'd say, look, why don't you just resign so we don't have to go through with this, you being indicted in a trial and everything. So that's what Benedict did, and he continued to live in the Vatican until he died, which was kind of... And there's another movie I haven't seen. I need to see. It's called The Two Popes, where Benedict is played by Anthony Hopkins, and Francis is played by a guy who looks so much like him, Jonathan Pryce. He's a British actor.
Boy, what do you make of... we had the GDP number come out yesterday, and Navarro immediately came out and explained, you know, why you shouldn't pay any attention to it. But he actually is somewhat correct in the sense that there was an increase in imports as people tried to get ahead of the tariff. So he's not all wrong there. A matter of fact, I think he probably is correct. But the number with the GDP still resides with the deflator, and I haven't dug in and find out what it is. I mean, the formula is, it's the nominal number, which is all goods and services, which, again, I talked about earlier, is kind of consumer stuff, investment stuff, government spending, and the net of imports versus exports. But then you have to say, okay, what's the inflation number? And you have to drop that down by the inflation, because you're talking about the gross number. And I think that deflator has been wrong for 25 years, guys. And then we had the earnings come out last night, and we're way up here. We're talking with Lou earlier about insider trading. And you've seen, it seems like the big companies not only are doing very well, but they also seem to be doing very well, and they're letting people know they're doing very well. So you have big companies trading for multipliers that I've never seen, and yet they don't ever seem. And for instance, you know, Microsoft is trading for a big multiplier. When you do that, it's the anticipation that your next earnings are going to be good. All right, so the earnings are up 10%. Well, now the stock's up 10%, or now it's back down to 9%. So it seems like it's not like the market used to be thought of in my younger days as the all-seeing, all-knowing. What's the word for knowing everything? I'm the something something. Omniscient. That if all of a sudden a stock ran up 10% before earnings, and you go, hey, what the hell's going on? And the earnings came out, and they were up 10%, and everybody'd say there's terrific earnings, but XYZ's unchanged, because it already was sort of anticipated. It came out as anticipated. It's up 10% from the beginning. But now it seems like the news is anticipated as good, and when it is good, it goes up even higher. Or if you somehow miss on earnings, you get annihilated. It's a little different on how this all works out. But again, it seems to me that, well, two things. One is the Fed is in lockstep with the Oval Office right now. We're right back up to 5% growth in money supply, which is way too high for this economy because it's not growing that fast. But it's been that way for a long time. How long, if you agree with me at all, that somehow or another the owners of assets have gone way further than the people who just are working stiffs for a really long time, to the point where I think everybody's sort of noticing it, or certainly if you're a working stiff, you notice it. How long can that go on, guys? We have guys on the show to think it can only go on like another week, and I'm going, no, it's going to have forever. I would never, even though that's my opinion, I still stay long for my clients, because I think it's got a ways to go, and if we're protected, the day that, you know, something turns the other way, we'll be okay. I think that this thing's going even higher, even though the wage versus expense stuff is going the other way. What do you guys think?
Well, Andy's nearby neighbor is Peter Navarro. Hey, Andy, maybe you can run over there and see if he's still at home. I think this, on a serious note, I think the issue is the instability. You know, how can anyone make any sort of decision financial or otherwise with the I mean, we saw that cabinet meeting yesterday where, you know, there were red Gulf of America hats on the cabinet room table in front of every member of the cabinet. It looked like some sort of one of these newsreels you see of people praising Kim Jong-un. Is there any critical analysis going on at the level of these cabinet secretaries? That really bothers me.
I don't think you could pop up a discouraging word in there or you're out.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And they're now saying that Scott Bessent, the Treasury Secretary, he's the wise one amongst all of those, and he's the biggest sycophant of them all.
Where did he came from? Cantor Fitzgerald, right?
No, that was Howard Lutnick. The Commerce Secretary. He's terrible. Bessent came from a hedge fund. I don't know which one.
Oh, that's right. He came from some big hedge fund.
Yeah, but the funny thing is, years back, he worked for George Soros. It's funny. It's funny with that on his resume. He's in the cabinet.
Well, if he, you know, I've heard. I mean, you can't help but hear the name. If you work for Soros, where do you work? Does he have an onshore office, or where do you work from home, or I mean, where does Soros have an office?
Yeah, he's retired now. He's in his 90s. These NGOs that he funded, Open Society Foundation, Open Society Institute, they're scattered all around the world now. In some countries, they've been banned, like in Hungary and in Russia. As far as he's passed a lot of his responsibilities off to his son, I believe that's Alex Soros.
Well, I mean, so, if I want to interview with Soros, which I don't, where the hell would I go? Is there a spot in New York, or are they in Washington?
I do believe he spends most of his time in New York, yeah.
Okay, so he's not. Why do I get the feeling that he lives like in Bermuda or someplace? He doesn't.
Well, he's probably got a lot of operations in the offshore places, but he also had a major presence in London for, and he probably still does.
Wayne, why don't you mention, Wayne wrote a book that was largely about Soros, and it has a very interesting part about the James Bond franchise. Why don't you share that, Wayne?
Yeah, Daniel Craig, the last guy to play James Bond, he was a couple of his movies. He was fighting an enemy, and it was called Quantum. Now the James Bond franchise was owned for a long time. It was Albert Broccoli, and his daughter Barbara took it over after Albert Broccoli died. But one of the interesting things is every single James Bond movie, going back to the first one, British intelligence played a part in it and also helped to steer the message.
Well, Ian Fleming worked for Bill Stevenson. He was like his third or fourth in command.
That's right. And when Daniel Craig took over as Bond, and there was this nefarious group called Quantum, there was this one movie, and it was called Quantum of Solace. And it had to do with a nefarious guy trying to take over a Latin American country. I believe it was Bolivia. And it was quite clear that this Quantum of Solace, the nefarious hedge fund guy they were referring to was a composite of George Soros. George Soros was so irritated by that, he decided to make a play for the studio, for the Bond studio, which is over over really? In England.
Really?
And he just was irritated and because of that connection. Now, why did England decide, well, we're gonna highlight Soros? Because he used the short currency. He did it in Southeast Asia in the early 90s. And he also tried to short the pound.
Well, one of the things that we touch a little bit on the show, and maybe you guys can opine on it a little bit, we touch a little bit on the show that you never hear anywhere else. I mean, I won't say anywhere else, but you can watch CNBC or Fox Business News all day long and you'll never hear it. The current currency movements are, if you're a big shot, are much more important to you than stock movement. I won't say much more important, but it's... we had, like when Mexico used to downgrade their or devalue their currency, the people in the know would move their stuff offshore that night and move it back, so they ended up with 10% more money than their neighbor the next day. And we've had almost a 5-8% move in our currencies here in the last few months. The dollar's gone down, and I'm, as a matter of fact, the last month maybe, and I'm going to say that unbeknownst to the peasants, meaning us, we don't even look at that. Yet if somebody had some idea, and you had a guy with, you know, $2 billion, we wouldn't even notice the dude sending the $2 billion to the euro dollars for 2 weeks and bringing it back, and now all of a sudden has, you know, $2.1 billion, which is better than any stock trade I've ever made. I mean, the currency movements, people don't think that this sort of just happens. It doesn't just happen. That there's massive money to be made in there. I'm going to say totally undetectable. You know, if, like Lou says, the SEC actually is going to watch front-running trades coming out of the White House, which I doubt, but they're sure as hell not going to go anywhere near a currency transaction because the market is so big, you go to so different places, nobody has any idea who the hell you are. And if all of a sudden I went to, I don't know if Lakeside Bank could even do it, if I went to Lakeside Bank tonight and said, hey, I want to take my, whatever, 50 grand out of the account, which, you know, which I'm not sure I even have there, but if I did, and I want to go to 50,000 worth of pounds tonight, I don't even think that goes anywhere, does it? I mean, why would anybody give a crap? I mean, and yet, if all of a sudden a week from now, the pound appreciates 5% against the dollar, and I come flying back, and now I got 52.50, hey, bingo, right? And nobody even knows the hell I did in this world because we're so dollar fixated that we got the buck in our pocket, and that's, does anybody even talk about that kind of stuff?
Well, on the issue of Soros, he made a lot of money on
that's what I'm saying.
Speculation.
You could make more money on currencies if you got. Yeah. You got any kind of information, you wouldn't even touch the stock market. Why would you?
Yeah. I just to finish the story on Soros and the bond franchise. So he never did buy the franchise. Within the last year, Jeff Bezos has.
Really?
And the first thing he did was fire Barbara Broccoli, the daughter of Albert, the original producer of every Bond movie. So God knows where it's going to go under, where Bond is going to wind up under Bezos.
Well, from what did you guys ever read, Andrew, I bet you have. You ever read a book, A Man Called Intrepid?
Yeah, I haven't, but tell us.
It's not a big, big fat book or anything. It's essentially the story of Bill Stevenson, who was the head of, what was the British Secret Service during the war?
He may have been with MI. I think it was MI6. Yeah, the foreign intelligence.
He was the dude who was in charge of all clandestine crap, the underground in France, I mean, all that stuff.
Yeah,
came across his desk, and he was I compare him, which I shouldn't, to our current group of politicians on every level, Democrat, Republican, whatever it is. The guy was a brilliant mathematician. He was one of the inventors of television. He also was a light heavyweight boxing champ. And, you know, just was had a resume like you wouldn't believe, and he ends up with in this job. And, of course, he didn't want anybody to even know who the hell he was, right, unlike our politicians today. And he was essentially M in the Bond movies.
Yeah.
And all the reports hit his desk every day, and allegedly, unlike some people we have in power these days, said he would read the equivalent of a Victorian novel and reports every day. He knew everything that was going on every place. His mind was to that extent. He was the correspondent to Bill, who's the guy here?
Bill Donovan.
Wild Bill.
Wild Bill. Bill Donovan. It was Little Bill and Big Bill. And they were pretty much, and one of the parts in the movie, he was here visiting our guys before the war even started, when they were doing the submarine stuff. You know, there was no war in the Atlantic before Pearl Harbor. And he was in New York, and the British had found a guy who was sending... he was a spy. He was sending stuff to the Germans about convoys leaving New York. And he went out one night, and they said, where were you? Like the last hour. Because I was just out. And he goes, what do you mean out? He's we got to talk about this guy who's sending these convoys. He goes, we don't have to talk about him anymore. he made a little move like a karate chap. He goes, we don't have to worry about him anymore. So here's a guy at that level essentially killing a spy on our property, which, you know, I guess my hat's off to him or whatever, but he was there, but Ian Fleming was probably he was in the book. He was like the fourth or fifth in command.
And he operated under the cover of being a, a journalist in Manhattan. He was actually very much involved in the British propaganda effort to, you know, convince America they have to get into the war.
I guess even then he had the reputation of having the wildest imagination in the place.
Oh yeah.
Well, and part of it resonates through history to maybe close the loop on Wayne's story. Think of the villains that he created that probably a younger generation that may not even be that familiar with some of the original Bond movies, they still kind of know that these people like Dr. No and Ernst Stavro Blofeld and all of the rest of these villains were horrible people. And Fleming imagined this. It came to life in the movies. And I can't help thinking sometimes we have a new generation that almost seems like they're here. I'm not talking about kids. I'm talking about people who want to control the world, who are right out of Fleming's imagination.
I was just at in the Bond movie Moonraker. The villain's his name is Hugo Drax. You know, four letters at each name, and he's a former Nazi who starts this huge company that lands all these contracts to launch rockets and payloads into outer space. Does that sound familiar?
Oh yeah, God. Hey, I want to ask you guys on the political side, because you guys are, you know, you got your finger on the pulse of that a little bit. The first 100 days, and I'm willing to give Trump a reasonable break on a lot of things, to be honest with you, because I think from the side he's on, he's dealt with government and had to deal with them a bunch of times, and is really somewhat attuned to the inefficiency you get there and some of the insider dealings and who gets. I mean, if I was ever put in that position, I would carry my history of what I think of the regulatory community and who they pick on and who they don't and those kinds of things. And I'm not saying they ever, were crazy to us or anything, but I see things. I'd be concerned about reform there a little bit. I won't use the term, cut them apart or anything, but I'd want to know on some level, what are you doing that for? So a lot of the instincts that he has, I think are really pretty legit, even though I'm not a fan of the man personally at all. But I'm not going to say that everything he thinks about I disagree with, because that wouldn't be true. In some ways, in my lifetime, I always, if there could be I won't say a Solomon, or somebody who came in and somehow was from the outside and could somehow get rid of the good old boy thing in Washington to a certain extent. You never get rid of it, because that's the way people are. And a little bit of it makes sense. You know, do I really have to prosecute this guy, or do I just get him to go home and never come back? You know, do I really need to do that? That's kind of judgments people have made throughout history, and if they're decent moral people making those judgments, I'm willing to roll with them. But Trump seems to me, he's so inefficient and so thin-skinned that the good stuff he's trying to do, he kind of shoots himself in the foot. And that the chaos, I think if he just would stick to the few things he really wants to do, I actually don't think it's a bad thing. I mean, a lot of the stuff the Democrats were doing, I have no idea what they were doing. I mean, I've been a Democrat my whole life until lately. I have no idea what direction they were going. I mean, I can't even explain to you what their platform is, other than seemingly putting people in office that don't have a whole lot of talent. So, I mean, I'm not against a lot of what people want Trump to do. I don't know if he's capable of doing it. I mean, I think in his first 100 days, what he's done with the markets up and down all over the place, I think people are less willing to invest here now than they were 100 days ago because of the chaos. I mean, what's your read? I mean, without whether you like the guy or don't personally, what's your read, right? Man, I would be less inclined to go to the bank and buy money for a factory today than I was in September.
Here's what I think is a major point that's often overlooked by the news media, which wants headlines. So 100 days, Roosevelt had 100 days. Here's the fundamental difference that I think goes to your point, Tim. Roosevelt proposed and enacted legislation during his 100 days. So for the most part, it's not just him making announcements and executive orders. And I think I saw a statistic yesterday that there's been only 5 pieces of legislation that Trump has enacted. All the rest of it is executive orders and him making announcements of lesser legal import. And so the chaos you're talking about comes from the fact that Congress is supposed to be really the first branch of government thinking about these things and doing them with a nudge from the president. And that's what the 100 days of Roosevelt was. You had close to 30% unemployment, not 2% unemployment, and Congress was pressured into passing laws. Now, some of them, like the NRA, were later struck down by the Supreme Court as an overreach. But still, it was through a constitutional process, and I think that's a big difference that goes to.
Was there any truth, Andrew? You would know this. That was either his first year. Now, he didn't get inaugurated until what, March in those days, right?
Yes.
Was it either the first year or the second year? Washington had a hotter than hell summer, and in order to get his legislation passed, didn't they bring everybody back during the summer to the point where they couldn't even meet inside? They had to meet outside. It was brutally hot and humid. And finally, after a certain period of time, Congress said the hell with it, and they signed what he wanted and went home or something along. Well,
that's, of course, what Red Auerbach would do if the Boston Celtics had a visiting locker room during the playoffs. But it sounds very logical. And Red Auerbach not only is from longtime Celtics coach, he's not only from Washington, but he lived in Washington all during the time that he was running the Celtics. In fact, he died up here. So it wouldn't be a surprise to me if he didn't learn that from Roosevelt.
I guess my question is it he has both houses of Congress Is it just a disdain for Congress, or does he not think it's fast enough? Or there has to be some reason. Or does he just like signing executive orders in front of a camera? I mean, I don't think, maybe that's it. I hope it's not that trivial. But why not go through Congress?
Well, it's very narrow majorities, and complicated by the fact that some of the people in his own party are very ideological and wouldn't vote for anything that's particularly complex in many ways.
Well, somehow, so, if you look at, this is just, I don't know if you guys listen to the show, but one of the themes that we have with Carl all the time is if you look at the federal budget and the big holes that are in it, you can, and you guys know this number better than me, if you fired 30% of the people in Washington, I'm going to say you take a tenth of 1% off the budget. The big hole is in medical. And Social Security can be fixed with probably one more year and half a more percent on people's taxes. It's a close fix. But the medical stuff, I don't see the Republicans have done. I mean, Obama did a poor job on Obamacare, and he foolishly did not make it bipartisan. So it's been a sticking point for Republicans for the last God knows how many years. That was a big mistake on his part. But the Republicans have never really acted to, quote, fix it. Yet that's where the hole is. Now, it seems like, you know, this is a horrible even assessment, that their solution is we're just not going to cover people or kick it back to the states where we know they can't cover them. But the fact is that the medical community is taking a huge hide out of the people here. I mean, we have people paying, you know, $1,000 for fatso drugs that should cost $10. We have chemotherapy treatments that cost $50 that should cost $5. I mean, how is anybody, if somebody doesn't address that, somehow that's going to take us down, especially since some of these companies are overseas and they don't even pay taxes here, which is even more bizarre. I mean, if that's not addressed, you can do all this other crap you want, and I don't see how we get anywhere unless you just don't cover enough people and they all croak and you don't worry about it, which I don't think even Trump is that heartless. I mean, where do you think that side's going? Is there any movement at all there?
Well, I think, you know, the fact is that a lot of our pharmaceuticals are manufactured in India and sent over here. You know, very, very common, but widely used prescription drugs like metformin for diabetes, for type 2 diabetes. And I'm afraid that with the supply chain coming under attack, we're not only going to see empty shelves here, but we're going to see empty pharmacies.
Wait, now when you say that, I'm sorry to interrupt. Unfortunately, that my background is in pricing. If somebody charges somebody $50,000 for a chemo treatment, all right, now say that chemo treatment is made in India,
yeah,
and it comes here for $200 and the tariffs 50%, it becomes $300. I guess they can snivel about the price, but the markup is on this end, not on the Indian end.
Yeah. Well, then you've got the intermediaries. You know, if you go to the hospital, you look at, you know, these hospital bills, and you know, you see these people. Oh, how come I was charged $1,800? This guy came in and looked at me and left.
Yeah. Well, I mean, how does any party basically have the balls to go after that? Because that's where the hole is. I mean, Medicare doesn't cover.
See very soon, because we are getting to the point there has to be legislation, and the trade-off is going to be the big trade-off is going to be what they do about Medicaid in the states. And this is, as you pointed out, this is life or death, or at least health for a lot of people, and that's where the money is.
Well, but that would be a solution, just not cover them, right? I don't know that that's, but you know, I don't know. You guys, hopefully, you're in areas. If you, I don't know if I wouldn't sentence you to this, but if you came to Chicago and we wanted to take like the L or the bus more than the L, to the south side or the west side, and just drive around. You know, plunk you guys in my pickup truck and we'll drive around. And you just look at the people on the sidewalks and crossing the street. I don't know if drugs are the issue or something's the issue, but these people in their 30s and 40s, they look horrible.
Yeah, it looks like one of those post-apocalyptic, you know, movie after a nuclear war. I grew up around Philadelphia, and there's an area, Kensington Avenue, which is, Philly has an L also, and these people are like wandering around the L, underneath the L, and they look like zombies.
Yeah, yeah.
It's unbelievable.
It's not like, he was on a show once with my buddy Dr. Johnson. Not the real hot-looking Dr. Johnson in what was the miniseries? She was the with this all the sex. I give him crap about that all the time. What was the one that wrote all this? Did all the sex therapy? Tell us that guy's name.
Oh, Dr. Ruth Westheimer.
Whatever he did, it was a miniseries, and she was a smoking hot nurse. Anyway, I digress. He said that the you can't just go into one of these homeless places. You'd have to go in, you know, excuse the vision, almost with like a van, gather people up, give everybody a physical, and he said you might, if you had 100 people there, you might get two people that are capable of working an eight-hour day the next week. Other than that, it's a process. I mean, that he was saying that if you all of a sudden don't work, and all of a sudden you don't have a place really decent to live, and you go to one of these places, and all of a sudden... If it's just booze, you're probably, you know, happy. But if it starts to be drugs, he says, you're 3-4 months into it, you're not capable of going back to work on Monday morning.
I mean, that's right.
It's a massive process to identify who needs what, where, how much treatment, how much training, how much... Physically, some people are a mess. Because it would be a massive undertaking to do this. And yet, it's probably cheaper in the long run than let it go the way it is. I mean, I don't really have the solution. I just don't see anybody coming up with one, the people that have the job to do that.
Well, part of the problem, here's two other related problems that people don't want to address so things don't get solved. One is in the civil liberties area, You have a lot of people whose jobs is based on 100% civil liberties. So in the old days, 50, 60 years ago, or maybe even 80, a cop would just crack people on the head with a nightclub and throw them in the jail or put them in an institution. And so there's got to be accommodation, and that was thrown out. But what you have is nobody's doing anything about obvious public nuisances. But somehow that's got to be solved. The other problem is what employer, how many employers want to bring some homeless person in with the smells, the danger, and say, okay, we're going to give you a chance. Now, some will, but there's a risk. And how do you assess that risk?
Well, I think that somehow or another, and again, I'm one of these guys, and I think you guys probably are too, come up with a plan. It's not going to be perfect, and you try it for 6 months. And if it doesn't work, you stop it and try something else. I mean, one thing you guys may learn, maybe you don't want to learn from a guy who trades for a living. You do the best you can. You lob it out there. If it doesn't work, you fix it the best you can. And you're going to have some winners out of the gate, some losers out of the gate, and there's some you're going to be able to fix. Nobody's going to be 100%. But you can't stop trying, and you can't stop fixing. At the end of the day, if you get more than right than you're wrong, you're pretty damn good. I mean, I don't have an idea. We have all kinds of places in Chicago that need fixing. If all of a sudden, then for the first 6 months, people work for $20 an hour for the city, cleaning out old people's backyards that look like crap in somebody's neighbors why nobody wants to move there, cleaning up parks. I'd rather do that than just pay a bunch of money to stare and look at them or something. I mean, let's do something.
Yeah, I've always said that I think that Trump should nominate Steve Bannon to be his outreach coordinator to the homeless people, since he looks like one of them anyway, you know. So
I think a lot of what Trump sees is wrong. If he were to list the top five things, I'm not so sure that the three of us wouldn't agree with four of them or three of them. You know, I think government has been very intrusive to him and other people. I think the idea that he was, and I have attorneys I meet every couple of weeks usually, some of the overreach by the federal law enforcement group, where if they drag you down to where you're penniless when you might have had money before, they think that's part of what they do. I mean, I don't, as much as I may dislike Trump as a person, I don't think anybody in this country should ever have a $60 million legal bill dealing with the government. I mean, what the hell is that? Do you? I mean,
he's great at identifying problems. And here's one that just came up this week. Now, you're immersed and an expert in finances. Well, Trump, I think it was yesterday, he said, when asked about, China's not going to be shipping toys that much, he said, well, these kids, instead of having 30 dolls, they'll have to have two.
They might cost a few extra bucks.
Yeah, but who's going to argue with that? Because these spoiled kids with the $30 every Christmas, 30 dolls every Christmas, who's going to... Nobody advocates that. So he, and his solution is just give the kids two dolls.
Says a guy who has a golden toilet.
Yeah. Well, the issue on the tariffs. I mean, if you were to go back to when I was in grad school, with all the free market sort of dudes like Milton Friedman and those guys, they were all for a lot of the free market stuff, and I think at that time there was like nothing wrong with it, but one of their assumptions was, and you guys know this, was that if you can get economic prosperity and economic freedom into a country, eventually that will work its way into government. And they looked at the U.S. and Europe as a model, and they said eventually workers would find a way to get their fair share like we did here, at least for a while. They underestimated the idea that you would offshore stuff just because you can get child labor and no pollution laws in other places. I think if Milton Friedman, if you could roust him out of his grave today and show him what's going on, he'd go, I never thought that was going to happen. So my issues with China are we got a dash here, guys. My issues with China were, as Carl brings up every week, you can't just offshore child labor and pollution. But the tariffs, Trump's idea of a tariff is if we have any kind of a deficit, somehow they're screwing us. Well, I don't buy that at all. Yet what Carl talks about is legit. I don't want, just because they're giving 8-year-olds work over there for 2 cents an hour, I don't think that person should be competing with somebody here. Do you? I mean, I don't know. So is tariffs a way to even that up? Or do you say, we're not buying anything from anybody who doesn't have a law that says you can't work under 16. I mean, I don't know how to go about it. Maybe next week we should talk about that, because you guys, I think, probably have some thoughts on that, because there are some issues there. I mean, Trump, I think, is bringing up maybe the wrong ones, but I think he's identified some problems, haven't you?
Well, the office in the Department of Labor that used to track foreign exploitation of workers has has been shut down by Elon Musk, so I don't know how we get that data.
I have a hunch you have it going back to like a month ago. Hey, guys, as usual, fun. Have a good weekend. Stay off the golf course if there's too much pollen out there for you.
I'll try.
Are you playing a congressional, Andrew?
Invitation was lost.
Oh, good. When I get out there, I expect you to... I'll get my game together if you get me on congressional.
That'd be terrific. I'll work on it. You have a great weekend.
You too. SP Futures up 453. NASDAQ Futures up 298. We're still pretty high. Not as much as earlier, but still pretty good. Be right back tomorrow, Stocks and Jocks.
That's all, folks.